Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So we've talked on a number of occasions about the war between Iran and Israel last summer that we lived through very much the center of that here in Jerusalem. And so many different facets of that I think from a technological standpoint are just completely fascinating. We've talked about the intercontinental ballistic missiles, ICBMs. We've talked about the drone warfare and Israel's aerial defense capabilities. And one aspect that's also really interesting is that of satellite imagery and SatInt. So during the war, I mentioned that there was a number of, you know, open source intelligence accounts. But also, I think it's probably fair to say that every news agency around the world was buying up Maxar imagery in order to try to make sense of what was available. And I was looking into that whole area. I always assumed that you had to be, you know, sort of a Reuters or a BBC in order to buy commercial satellite imagery. And what I found is actually fascinating. There was some marketplace that you could literally buy, pay for a pass. Now, it wasn't cheap, but it was something that you could conceivably, you know, rustle up a few thousand dollars. And the idea that you can actually order a satellite in space to do a specific custom bespoke pass over a point on the Earth's geography, to me, is kind of mind-blowing. Like, it's a good tale for the pub. Oh, yeah, I was just working on my satellite pass. It should be, you might be able to see it overhead. That's my satellite. But during the war, so you have these open source accounts, and you also had some government accounts, and that kind of gray area of open source intelligence style defense think tanks staffed by people who used to work in imaging capacities at organizations like national signals intelligence agencies. Those people also commentating. So you've got kind of a widespread of people, but really a lot of them looking or reporting on the same imagery. Now, we can assume that Israel, the US, and allies have access to much higher resolution imagery than the imaging that we're talking about in the news and which Maxar is selling, and no one is going to be sharing that imaging publicly. But at least from the stuff that was in the public domain, it sparked a lot of debate. Now, my question is this. Some of that group, or maybe a lot of that group that were talking about that imagery are kind of, they know what they're talking about. They know what they're looking for. Nevertheless, they can reach very different conclusions about what they're seeing, because I guess you have a lot of room for interpretation, and you've got the risk, you know, the subterfuge is an element here, which I was fascinated to learn about in the war, that as part of Iran's attempts to hide things that it might be doing, it would literally set up decoys, like decoy 747s, decoy airbases. It's totally crazy. So my question really is, this world of satellite imagery, commercial satellite imagery, where you have organizations like Maxar that will sell to a subscriber base. Firstly, what is the difference between this imagery and the type of satellite imagery that we can understand that intelligence agencies have at their disposal today? We know that the resolution is going to be better, but what's the difference these days? And is it shrinking such that the commercial imagery is, the gap is narrowing, or do governments still have a considerable edge in terms of what they can see with their remote sensing versus what we can see? And the other aspect of this regarding Israel that I find really interesting is that the US had a veto for a number of years on imaging above a certain resolution in Israel, that as an ally, they wouldn't allow that to be sold. But that was lifted, I believe, a number of years ago. So this is, I think, a really interesting world. And there's one final aspect that I think is that really caught my attention. I think it was looking at one of these satellite image websites. The Earth is a big place, and even if you have wonderful resolution imagery, the ability to analyze that imagery and spot things like anomalies is limited by the manpower and any power that you have at your disposal. And even when you have humans staring at banks of screens with imagery, that doesn't always guarantee that you're going to spot anomalies. And it never occurred to me that this is another fertile application for AI. I think that one of the major vendors of satellite imagery was actually had a sort of bulletin feed whereby its AI systems were trying to find those anomalies. So I presume, very safe to say, that if this is going on in the open source world, it's for sure going on in the world of national intelligence. So if you have a well-resourced signals intelligence operation like the US or Israel that has a continuous feed of satellite imagery from around the world, and it's going to be spotting a lot of very mundane things. There's a patch of the Sahara Desert that was sand, and it's still sand. Nothing to see here, at least to the naked eye. But you're going to then be seeing things that might be very subtle and which would be incredibly hard for a human to spot at the type of pace that you might want them to spot it. And that's where I imagine, I think this is probably a pretty safe guess, that AI is playing a huge role in maybe this first pass triage of saying, okay, this is the last 24 hours of imaging we've gotten over Iran, or much more narrowly within an AOI, an area of interest, which was another acronym that I quickly stumbled upon in the world of satellite imagery. You provide a set of geo-coordinates, you define an area of interest, and that's how the pros do it, apparently. And that, of course, means that you're looking at far less data, and you can focus your resources and your analysis layer on a much smaller piece of Earth. So Herman and Corin, let's talk about the world of satellite imagery, or SatInt. And of course, it's worth pointing out that SatInt is not the only form of imaging intelligence. There's drone intelligence as well. There's observation balloons, but it's a major component in remote surveillance of planet Earth. How does it all work? And let's talk about all those questions I raised. Herman and Corin, over to you.
Welcome back to My Weird Prompts, everyone. I am Corn, and I am sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem, looking out at a surprisingly clear sky today. It is January 9th, 2026, and it feels like a good day to dive into something that has been literally hovering over our heads for the last few years.
And I am Herman Poppleberry. That clear sky is actually quite relevant to what we are talking about today, though as we will find out, clouds are not the barrier they used to be for the eyes in the sky. Our housemate Daniel sent us a fascinating prompt this morning. He has been thinking about the role of satellite intelligence, or SATINT, specifically during the conflict between Iran and Israel that we all watched unfold so closely last year.
It is a great prompt because it touches on something we all experienced. When things were heating up, you could not refresh your social media feed without seeing these high-definition images from companies like Maxar or Planet Labs showing missile bases, damage at airfields, or ship movements in the Persian Gulf. Daniel wants to know what the real difference is between that commercial stuff we see on the news and the top-secret data the intelligence agencies are using. Is the gap actually closing, or are we still seeing a pixelated version of the truth?
It is the classic question of the democratized versus the classified. For decades, the ability to see a person's shadow from space was a superpower reserved for only two or three nations. Now, anyone with a credit card and a legitimate reason can buy imagery that would have been considered a state secret in the 1990s. But to Daniel's point, the gap is a bit like the difference between a high-end consumer camera and a multi-billion dollar telescope. They both take photos, but they are playing different games.
Right. And before we get into the resolution wars, I want to make sure we address the other half of Daniel's question, which is about the sheer volume of data. Even if you have the best cameras in the world, you are basically trying to find a needle in a hayfield that is the size of a planet. That is where the artificial intelligence comes in. How do you triage millions of square kilometers of imagery every day to find one specific decoy or one subtle change in a dirt road?
Exactly. The human eye is amazing, but it does not scale. If you want to monitor every missile silo in central Iran 24/7, you need an AI that never sleeps and never gets bored. So, let's start with the resolution. That is usually what people focus on first. When you see a Maxar image on the news, you are usually looking at what they call 30-centimeter resolution. That means each pixel in the image represents a 30-centimeter by 30-centimeter by 30-centimeter square on the ground.
So, about the size of a standard ruler. You can see a car, you can tell it is a car, and you can probably tell if it is a truck or a sedan. But you are not reading the license plate.
Correct. Now, the legal limit for commercial companies used to be much stricter. The United States government actually regulates how clear commercial images can be. For a long time, you could not sell anything better than 50 centimeters. Then it dropped to 40, and now we are at 30. But here is the thing. The classified satellites, like the ones operated by the National Reconnaissance Office, the NRO, are rumored to be at 10 centimeters or even lower.
10 centimeters. That is the width of a palm. At that level, you are not just seeing a tank, you are seeing the specific hatch configuration or the type of external fuel tank it is carrying. But, Herman, is it just about the glass? Is it just a bigger lens, or is there more to the secret sauce?
It is a lot of things. It is the size of the mirror, yes. If you look at the Keyhole 11 or Keyhole 12 satellites, which are the backbone of American SATINT, they are essentially the Hubble Space Telescope, but pointed down instead of up. They have massive primary mirrors, but it is also about the processing. The military uses advanced adaptive optics to clear up atmospheric distortion. You know how the air shimmers over a hot road?
Yeah, it blurs everything.
Exactly. The atmosphere does that to satellite photos too. Classified systems have much more sophisticated ways of mathematically removing that shimmer in real time. Also, their orbits are different. Commercial satellites usually stay in a sun-synchronous orbit, which means they pass over the same spot at the same time every day, usually mid-morning, to get the best shadows for depth perception.
That makes sense. It is like having a consistent lighting setup for a photo shoot. But if I am a military commander, I do not want to wait until 10 in the morning to see if the enemy is moving. I need to know at 2 in the morning, or during a sandstorm.
And that is where the gap really widens. This is where we get into SAR, or Synthetic Aperture Radar. Daniel mentioned remote surveillance systems, and SAR is the king of that world right now. Unlike a regular camera that just captures reflected sunlight, a SAR satellite blasts its own microwave pulses down to Earth and measures how they bounce back.
So it is essentially taking a picture with radio waves. And since radio waves go right through clouds, smoke, and darkness, you get a clear image regardless of the weather.
Precisely. During the tensions last summer, when there was heavy cloud cover over certain parts of the region, the optical satellites were blind. But the SAR satellites kept right on clicking. Now, commercial SAR has exploded recently. Companies like Umbra and Capella Space are selling SAR imagery with incredible detail. You can see the texture of the ground. You can see if a patch of dirt was recently disturbed because the radio waves bounce differently off loose soil versus packed soil.
That feels like a massive leap for open source intelligence. If the public can see through clouds now, the old trick of waiting for a rainy day to move your equipment does not work anymore. But I imagine the government versions of SAR are still a generation ahead in terms of what they call phase information, right?
Oh, absolutely. The classified SAR can do something called coherent change detection. This is mind-blowing, Korn. They can take two radar images of the same spot from different times and compare the phase of the waves. If someone walked across a field of grass between the first and second photo, the radar can detect that the blades of grass were slightly bent. It shows up as a glowing trail on the map.
Wait, so you aren't even seeing the person, you are seeing the physical memory of their footsteps in the grass from space?
Yes. It is called a footprint in the phase data. You can see where a vehicle drove across a desert, even if there are no visible tracks to the human eye. Commercial companies are starting to offer basic change detection, but that level of sub-millimeter precision is still very much in the realm of the big intelligence agencies.
So the gap in resolution is narrowing, but the gap in the type of physics they are exploiting is still pretty wide. Let's talk about the AI side of this. Daniel asked how AI triages this stuff. We have thousands of satellites up there now. Between the big Maxar birds and the tiny CubeSats from Planet, we are generating petabytes of imagery every single day. There are not enough humans in the world to look at every frame.
No way. Not even close. If you had 100,000 analysts, they would still miss 99% of the data. This is where computer vision and deep learning have completely transformed the field in just the last 3 or 4 years. In 2026, the AI is not just looking for a tank. It is doing what we call pattern of life analysis.
Explain that. What does a pattern of life look like to a satellite?
Think about a missile base. A human analyst might look at it once a day and say, yep, the trucks are still there. But an AI can monitor a low-resolution feed from a constellation like Planet, which takes a photo of the entire Earth every single day. The AI counts the number of cars in the parking lot at 8 in the morning. It notices that usually there are 50 cars, but today there are 200. It notices that the security gate is staying open 30 seconds longer than usual. It flags that as an anomaly.
So it is looking for the weirdness in the routine. It is not necessarily identifying a weapon. It is identifying a change in behavior that suggests a weapon might be being prepared.
Right. And then, once the AI flags that anomaly, it automatically tasks a high-resolution satellite, like a Maxar Worldview or a government keyhole, to go take a much closer look. It is a tip and triage system. The cheap, low-res satellites act as the tripwire, and the expensive, high-res ones act as the microscope.
That is a huge efficiency gain. But what about the deception part? Daniel mentioned decoys. We know Iran is famous for this. They build fake aircraft carriers out of wood and metal. They have inflatable missiles that look identical to the real thing from a certain height. Can a... I tell the difference between a real missile and a balloon.
This is the front line of the current intelligence war. It is essentially a game of generative adversarial networks, or GANs, but in the real world. The people building the decoys are trying to fool the AI, and the people training the AI are using examples of decoys to make the system smarter.
How does the AI spot the fake? Is it looking at the shadows?
Shadows are a big one. An inflatable decoy often has a slightly different center of gravity or a different surface tension, which changes how light reflects off it. But the real giveaway is often the thermal signature or the spectral signature. This brings us to another type of SATINT, hyperspectral imaging.
I remember we touched on this briefly in episode 105 when we talked about AI benchmarks. Hyperspectral is where you aren't just looking at red, green, and blue light, right?
Exactly. A standard camera sees 3 bands of light. A hyperspectral sensor might see hundreds of very narrow bands, including infrared and ultraviolet. Every material on Earth has a unique spectral fingerprint. Painted plywood has a different fingerprint than the radar-absorbent coating on a real stealth drone. A rubber decoy has a different thermal mass than a 10-ton steel missile.
So, even if it looks perfect to a human eye in a standard photo, the AI looking at the hyperspectral data says, wait a minute, this object is not heating up at the same rate as a piece of metal should, or it is reflecting a specific frequency of infrared that suggests it is made of polymers, not aerospace-grade aluminum.
Precisely. And the AI is much better at spotting those subtle spectral discrepancies than a human. It can also look at the context. If you see a missile launcher in the middle of a field, but there are no tire tracks leading to it, the AI is going to flag that as a likely decoy. A real multi-ton vehicle cannot just teleport into a field without disturbing the soil.
That is a great point. It is the holism of the data. The AI is checking the object, the soil around it, the thermal history of the spot, and the recent movement patterns. It is much harder to fake a whole ecosystem of activity than it is to fake a single object.
It really is. But we shouldn't underestimate the low-tech counterintelligence. During the conflict last year, we saw reports of forces using simple things like smoke screens, or even just large tarps with patterns painted on them to confuse the AI's edge detection algorithms. If you can make a square building look like a jagged pile of rocks to a computer, you might buy yourself enough time to move your assets.
It's like those dazzle camouflage patterns they used on ships in World War I. They aren't trying to make the ship invisible. They are trying to make it impossible for the observer to tell its speed and heading. In 2026, we are seeing digital dazzle designed to make an object unclassifiable by an AI.
It's a fascinating arms race. And it's not just about the big satellites anymore. Daniel mentioned remote surveillance systems. We have to talk about the integration of SATINT with HALE drones, which stands for High Altitude Long Endurance.
Like the Global Hawk or the newer solar-powered ones that can stay up for months at a time.
Exactly. These are basically atmospheric satellites. They fly at 60,000 feet, way above commercial air traffic. They don't have the orbital mechanics of a satellite, so they can just hover over a single city or military base for days. When you combine the persistent gaze of a HALE drone with the global reach of a satellite constellation, you get what the military calls unblinking eye capability.
That sounds incredibly intense from a privacy and security perspective. If you are living in a zone under that kind of surveillance, there is literally no moment where you are not being watched from multiple angles and multiple spectrums.
It is the end of secrecy in the traditional sense. We talked about this a bit in the OSINT episode last week, number 207, but the satellite component adds a layer of truth that is very hard to argue with. During the Iran-Israel conflict, one of the most interesting moments was when a government would claim they hit a target, and within 2 hours, an open-source analyst on the internet would post a Maxar image showing that the missile actually landed in an empty field.
Right. The fog of war used to last for days or weeks. Now, the fog is cleared by a satellite pass within 90 minutes. It changes the political calculus. You can't lie about your successes or failures as easily when the receipts are available for purchase by any news agency.
But that brings up a danger, too. Remember when we were looking at those images of the Isfahan airbase? There was a huge debate online because different satellites showed different things. One SAR image made it look like a hangar was destroyed, but an optical image from a few hours later showed it was just a clever paint job or a shadow.
That is where the gap Daniel asked about gets dangerous. If the public is using 30-centimeter imagery and making life-and-death conclusions, but the government has 10-centimeter imagery that shows a completely different story, you get this weird divergence of reality. The public thinks one thing is happening, while the leaders know something else.
And that is a gap that might never fully close. Even as commercial resolution gets better, the government will always keep the best version for themselves. There is actually something called the Kyle Bingaman Amendment in the U.S. that specifically limits the resolution of imagery of Israel that can be sold commercially.
Wait, I thought that was overturned or changed recently.
It was softened in 2020, allowing for better resolution than before, but there are still national security shutters. The government can essentially tell Maxar or Planet you are not allowed to collect or sell imagery of this specific coordinate for the next 48 hours. It is called shutter control.
So even if the tech is there, the legal and political shutter can still create a black hole in our knowledge. That is a sobering thought. We think we see everything, but we only see what the licensing allows us to see.
Exactly. Now let's pivot back to the AI for a second, because there is a really cool development in 26 that I think Daniel would find interesting. It is called on-orbit processing.
Instead of sending the raw data down to Earth, the satellite does the thinking itself.
Yes. Traditionally, a satellite takes a massive photo, which is a huge file, and has to wait until it passes over a ground station to dump that data via radio. That creates a bottleneck. You might have a photo of a missile launch, but it takes an hour to get it to an analyst.
And in a missile conflict, an hour is an eternity.
Right. Now, we are putting AI chips, like specialized NPUs or neural processing units, directly on the satellites. The satellite looks at the image as it takes it. The AI says, nothing happening here, just desert, nothing here. Wait, that is a flame trail from a missile. It then sends a tiny, tiny data packet, just a few kilobytes, via a laser link to a relay satellite like Starlink.
And that alert reaches the commander in seconds.
Seconds. The satellite essentially says, I saw something, look here now. It doesn't even send the photo initially, it just sends the coordinates and the classification. That is how you get real-time SATINT. It is not just a photo anymore, it is an automated sensor network.
That is a massive shift. It turns the satellite from a camera into a scout. I wonder how that affects the decoy problem. If the AI on the satellite is making split-second decisions about what is important, could it be tricked into ignoring a real threat because it looked like a decoy?
That is the ultimate nightmare for an intelligence officer. It is called a false negative. If the enemy knows how your AI classifies things, they can design their real weapons to look like uninteresting objects. They might make a mobile launcher look like a standard refrigerated shipping container. The AI sees 1,000 containers a day, so it ignores it.
It is the hiding in plain sight strategy, but optimized for a machine's blind spots. It makes me think about how much we rely on these systems. Herman, do you think we are getting to a point where the AI is so good that humans are being phased out of the loop?
I don't think so. I think the role of the human is shifting. We used to need humans to be detectors finding the thing. Now we need humans to be interpreters understanding the why. An AI can tell you that there are 10 more planes on the tarmac today. But a human analyst who understands the local politics, the history of that specific unit, and the current diplomatic chatter can tell you that those 10 planes mean an attack is imminent, or just that there is a training exercise for a holiday parade.
Context is the one thing AI still struggles with. It can see the what, but not the so what.
Exactly. And that brings us to the remote surveillance part of Daniel's question. It isn't just satellites. In the conflict last year, we saw the integration of ground-based sensors too. Things like seismic sensors that can hear the vibration of a heavy truck from miles away, or acoustic sensors that can triangulate the launch of a drone by the sound of its engine.
And all of that data gets fed into the same common operating picture as the satellite imagery.
Right. It is called multi-INT. You take the SAT-INT, you layer on the SIG-INT, which is signals intelligence, like intercepted radio or cell phone pings, and you add the HUMINT, or human intelligence. When the satellite sees a truck, the radio intercept hears the driver talking, and the ground sensor feels the weight of the vehicle, you have a very high confidence identification.
It's like a jigsaw puzzle, where every type of intelligence is a different shaped piece. Without the satellite piece, you don't know where the truck is. Without the signal piece, you don't know who is in it.
That is a perfect analogy. And for Daniel's question about the gap narrowing, the real narrowing isn't just in the resolution of the photos, it is in the accessibility of the multi-INT. 10 years ago, only the CIA could do this kind of cross-referencing. Today, a dedicated group of researchers on Discord can combine commercial satellite photos with public flight tracking data and leak Telegram messages to track a general across a continent.
The power of the crowd is the real new frontier. It's not just one AI in a basement at the Pentagon. It is thousands of people using hundreds of different tools. But that also leads to a lot of misinformation. We saw that during the war, too. People misidentifying old footage or misinterpreting shadows to claim a victory that didn't happen.
Oh, the Twitter analysts were a nightmare sometimes. There was that one viral thread claiming a major port had been destroyed based on a low-res satellite image, but it turned out the smoke was just a low-hanging cloud. That is why the triage AI is so important. It provides a level of objective, mathematical consistency that humans, especially humans with a political bias, often lack.
So, if we were to summarize the state of SATINT for Daniel in 2026, the commercial world has caught up to where the secret world was maybe 10 or 15 years ago. We can see through clouds, we can see at night, and we can see changes in the dirt from footprints. But the secret world has moved on to real-time, on-orbit AI processing and hyperspectral analysis that can tell the difference between a real tank and a rubber, one by its chemical signature.
Exactly. And the unblinking eye is becoming a reality. The ability to hide anything of significant size on the surface of the Earth is essentially gone. If it is larger than a bread box and it is outdoors, someone or something knows it is there.
It makes me think about the future of conflict. If you can't hide, you have to move. Or you have to deceive. Maybe the future isn't about bigger bombs, but about better decoys and more confusing patterns of life.
It already is. We are seeing stealth architecture now. Buildings designed with angles that reflect radar waves away from satellites, just like a stealth fighter. We are seeing underground facilities being built deeper and with more sophisticated entrances to hide this foil. The dirt taken out during construction, which is a huge giveaway for satellite analysts.
Right. Because if the satellite sees a giant pile of fresh dirt appearing in the desert, it knows you are digging a hole.
Exactly. You have to hide the dirt, you have to hide the trucks, and you have to hide the heat. It is a total effort game of hide and seek.
This has been such a deep dive, Herman. I feel like I need to go put a tarp over my car now, just in case.
Just make sure it's not a tarp with a spectral signature that looks like a missile launcher, Korn. That would be a bad day.
Good point. So, what are the practical takeaways for our listeners? I think the first is to be skeptical of satellite proof you see on social media, unless it has been verified by multiple sources or high-res imagery. Shadows and clouds can play a lot of tricks on a low-res sensor.
And the second is to realize that privacy in the traditional sense is becoming a luxury of the indoors. The technology that tracks a missile in Iran is the same technology that can track the type of shoes you are wearing if you are standing in your backyard.
It's a brave new world of transparency, whether we want it or not. Daniel, thank you for that prompt. It really forced us to look at the conflict from a totally different perspective, one that is about 30,000 miles up.
Or about 300 miles up for the low Earth orbit stuff, but who's counting?
You are, Herman. You are always counting. Before we wrap up, I want to say a huge thank you to everyone who has been listening. We have been doing this for over 200 episodes now, and the community of Weird Prompt Seekers just keeps growing. If you are enjoying the journey with us, please take a second to leave a review on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. It genuinely helps other curious minds find the show.
It really does. And if you have a prompt of your own, maybe something that popped into your head while looking at the stars or reading the news, go to myweirdprompts.com and send it our way. We love digging into these rabbit holes.
We really do. You can also find our full archive and RSS feed there. This has been My Weird Prompts. I'm Korn.
And I'm Herman Poppleberry. We will see you next week, probably from a slightly different angle.
Stay curious, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.